There you go.
Ready? Okay. Good, we are now live. Yofi. Okay. So, first of all, thank you for joining to learn together. It's a big split for me. And I wanted to share with you something that I'm rather excited about. It's a new idea for me. Something that I worked on over the last little while. And it's an idea that builds on older ideas, but I think adds a whole other dimension. And I'm going to very quickly review some things I've said in the past, which one or two of you may have heard or not, but that's not the crux of the shiur, but it is important in terms of getting to where we're going and being able to understand. The truth of the matter is that this is what I chose for today is totally inappropriate for the context that we have. It's really very difficult to say anything about Shir HaShirim in a short, little presentation. It really is not the right setting or forum for it. But what can I do? I'm just excited about this. And to my mind, it's one of the most enigmatic Svarim in terms of Pshat in all of Tanakh. Shir HaShirim is one of those Svarim that for years and years I said, someday I'll get to that. I read through it, but no clue what's going on, really. Aware of what Mefarshim say and this, that, but really didn't have a handle on it. And in recent times, I really tried to work a lot on it. And I'm going to try to condense some of the conclusions of that study into just a few minutes. And hopefully that will give you some keys, about a half a dozen keys, but particularly one. I know science said six, and I'm going to try to stick to that, but particularly one. The sixth one is really the reason for the shiur, and that I believe are the keys to understanding the whole sefer. Okay, I'm not going to be able to take you through all eight prakim and explain how everything plays out, etc., that I leave for you. But I want to at least give you a kivun in terms of the sefer, and to suggest a little bit of a radical idea about, not the same thing, problematic about it. I mean, radical in that sense, but radical in the sense that I think it's a different way of looking at it about the Sefer as a whole. Okay? So, without further ado, we're going to begin. The question that ultimately I hope to answer relates to the first Pasuk. Shir HaShirim Asher L'Shlomo. What I want to try to do is suggest something about what the Sefer in general is about, what the nature of the Sefer is, but ultimately, this is the question that I really want to focus on. In what sense is it Shir HaShirim Asher L'Shlomo, other than authorship? Meaning, in what way does Shir HaShirim and its message connect to Shlomo HaMelech himself? What does it have to do with Shlomo HaMelech? Where is Shlomo HaMelech coming from on a personal level in terms of formulating this Sefer? Okay? Shir HaShirim is not a Sefer of Nevuah, right? It's a Sefer of Ruach HaKodesh. And as such, there's a difference between Nevuah and Ruach HaKodesh. The difference between Chumash and Nevi'im, the difference between Nevi'im and Ketuvim. And there are several differences. And I think one way of expressing it is that whereas in Nevuah, the basic message comes straight from Hashem, Ruach HaKodesh is divinely inspired, right? But it's not a Nevuah, it's inspiration. And therefore, yes, there is this, supernatural assistance in gleaning insights that a person wouldn't necessarily, be able to arrive at their own, but it is coming somehow from that person and their experience. And so let's try and understand where Shir HaShirim and its message connects to Shlomo HaMelech. I'm going to try to build an understanding of Shir HaShirim based purely on the Psukim. Okay? That doesn't mean that I'm ignoring what Chazal say by any means. I think it very much brings us back to what Chazal say, and perhaps even on a deeper level, but my starting point is not to take anything external. I want to try and build an understanding of Shir HaShirim from within. Okay? So very, very quickly. Number one, the first thing about Shir HaShirim that we have to take note of is that we're dealing with a mashal and a nimshal. Okay? And that's not a chiddush, but welcome. And but it is... whatever. Okay? Just basically that Shir HaShirim is a mashal, okay? And that Chazal says very clearly, Mefarshim says, etc., that we all know, but I want to show you from within, okay? I want to show you from within how you see the mashal aspect in the Pesukim, very, very quickly, just very, very briefly. Okay, so we're going to take a look. Okay. So if you look at the very first segment of the Sefer, Pesukim Bet through Dalet, after the title, after the Koteret, Shir HaShir Mishael Shlomo, it says as follows. Yishakeni minishikot piu, ki tovim dodecha miayin. L'reach shemanecha tovim shemen turak shemecha, alkein alamot ahivucha. Mashcheni acharecha narutza, or mashcheni acharecha narutza, two ways of understanding it, heviani hamelech hadarav, nagila v'nismucha bach, nazkira dodecha miayin, mesharim ahivucha. Now why do I say this is the first section? Because if you look at the end of Pasuk Bet and Gemol, Ki tovim dodecha miyayin and alkein alamot ayvucha, you'll see that those two strands are brought together in the end of Pasuk Dalid, right? Nazkira dodecha miyayin mesharim ayvucha, right? In Pasuk Bet, it talks about the yayin, in Pasuk Gimel about the ahava, and then the two are brought together, nazkira dodecha miyayin mesharim ayvucha, right? It brings together and closes the section. So this is one little unit, these three psukim. If you look at these three psukim, it's very interesting because what you see is the following. First of all, there is this mashal and nimshal that works together and is very much part of the pshat psukim because we have all these double meanings. For example, yishakeni minishikot pihu. Okay, so on the one hand, yishakeni, obviously connected to nishika, right, to kiss me, but Yishakeni mishikot pihu, right? Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. But there's also a play on the word mashkeh, right? Liquid, fluid. And you'll see that as we go on. And not coincidentally, the love and the kissing, etc., is connected to kitovim dodecha miyayin, right? Wine, which is of course a type of liquid, right? That's lirea, and they're, you know, the two ideas are interrelated here. L'reach shemanecha tovim, shemen turak shemecha, alkein alamot ayvucha. So we have here a second mashkeh, namely the shemen, right? And the shemen is connected with, there's this very obvious play on words, of shemen and
shame,
right? So there's the oil, and there's the, you know, reputation, the fame, the whatever. Okay, we continue in Pasuk Dalet. Mashreini acharecha narutza, heviani hamelech hadarav, nagila v'chabach, nazkira todach miyayin, mesharim e'ayvucha. And already, we encounter something that plays out throughout the Sefer, and that is that we have here yayin and shemen, and then we come to Pasuk Dal, mashreini, draw me close to you, right, draw me after you, pull me to you, mashchein be moshech, right, to draw, to pull, mashcheini acharecha, narutza, and, very interesting, what word is mashcheini a play on? Aside from the mshoch, it also has a connotation of, what are the words you see here in mashcheini?
Shachein.
Shachein, or? In the particular form, which I appear. That's the actual sharsh, you know, that's the actual words. Mishkan, right? And of course, what are the liquids in the mishkan?
Yayin,
shemen, right? These are, so what you have here, and it's like, so you have here really, again, I'm not going to go into depth, but just very, very briefly, we begin to get a little bit of the idea of how the mashal and the nimshal, right, come together in this. Everyone understand what I'm saying? In other words, there's this story about the love, there's the nishika, there's the you know, shemecha, but there's also the idea of the mishkan and the yayin, the shemen, and the way that the same words, you know, go in two different directions. And this already gives us a beginning of a taste of the idea of the mashal and nimshal aspect of Shir HaShirim. That's very, very important. It gives us a clue as to what, and this is, that was point one. Point number two is that it's going to have to do with the Mishkan or the Mikdash. Okay? And there are so many things throughout Shir HaShirim that relate to the idea of the Mishkan or the Mikdash. We're not going to go through them, but again, that's point number two. That's key number two. Key number three. Again, I said the Shir is about point number six, but I just have to go through points one through five before we can get to that. Okay, number three. I'm assuming everyone here knows Shir HaShirim well, because otherwise, you know, it's just no point. But if not, you know, there's always time after the Shir. The one of the things that's fascinating about Shir HaShirim and that makes it exceedingly difficult to decipher is the following phenomenon. And this is really an amazing thing. You look at Shir HaShirim, you know, most of Shir HaShirim consists of things that the Dod or the Ra'aya say, right? Things that these two lovers say, directed to each other, whether directly or in each other's mind or through some, whatever, however we understand it, but a conversation of some dialogue, a dialogue of some sort between the Dod and the Ra'aya. What's interesting about it is that not once in the entire Sefer, not once, do you have any, like, stage directions. You know what I'm saying? Narration, none of the stage directing, you have in a normal narrative. In other words, not once does it say, he said, or she said. You see what I'm saying? It never says, you know, and then the Raya said, or, you know, the Dod says to her, or the Dod says Bichlal. It doesn't ever talk about them doing anything, right? It never talks directly about, you know, he went to there, or she went to there, or they did this, or not once in the whole Sefer, okay? In other words, she talks about him doing things, and he talks about her doing things. You see what I'm saying? It was, she'll talk about how, you know, oh, kol dodi do fake, you know, and you know, she'll talk about mitza'uni ha-shomrim, but it doesn't talk about them doing any of these things. There is no narration whatsoever. So for that reason, it's very difficult to get a handle on the sequence of events, or even who's speaking. You know, you have to figure out, well, it's feminine, so it must, you know, what's being said is about a female, so it's him talking, right? But it all, we have to figure it out because none of it's there. In other words, what we have is kind of a massive, you know, flow of thoughts and articulation, but there's nothing that puts it together, no framework, and really no sequence. And that's very interesting, and that's a major clue to understanding the Sefer, or at least what the challenge of the Sefer is. Okay? That's a very important, that's point number three. There's no real story. I don't mean to say that it's not describing a story, but it describes it in a it doesn't describe it as a story, okay? But rather as things that are said, and usually in a very poetical way, by one or the other. Okay? Interspersed, there are these statements about what's going on in the outside world, and all of those are parallel and connected to what's going on in the inner world of these two lovers. Okay? Now, you'll understand why number three is very important when we get to point number four. Point number four is the following. When you get to the very end of the Sefer, get to the very, very end of the Sefer, in Perek Chet, you have that here, I believe. Yes, you do. Okay. Perek, there's a second box. Okay, the second box on the page. We'll come back to the first in a bit for point number five. But point number four, at the end, it talks about the family of the Raya, and they're speaking now. Achot lanu ktana v'shadayim in la manaseh lachotenu biyom shudu barba. Im chomahi nivne ala tirat kesef v'im delati natsura ala luach arez ani chomah v'shaday k'mit lo, and so on and so forth. And the point is that without going, again, I'm giving you just Rashi Krakim at this point, but, because really we're going to focus on point number six, as I said, but in terms of point number four, and I know there are very different ways of reading this, and you know the degree to which Mefarshim and even contemporaries understand the story in such different ways, even whether it's one story or many stories, well, what this tells me, and again, one could certainly argue with this, is that it seems to me that the real time frame for the story at this point seems to be, how old is the Raya at this point, right? And at what stage in the relationship, and what's really going on? So it seems to me that this puts into focus the whole Sefer, that really, we're talking about a very, very early stage. right? That we're talking about a very young girl who's just entering adolescence, and that this relationship, that we're not talking about someone who was married and separated, which is one way of understanding the Sefer. We're not talking about someone looking back on a long relationship, but lehefech, that really what the Sefer is about is this very young girl who has this relationship perhaps entirely in her mind, perhaps a little bit in the real world, but whatever exactly that is, she's at the very beginning of the relationship, not at the very end. And that if you read the Sefer carefully, I would argue, and this is what, you know, obviously you have to sit and do, but it seems to me that the way to read the Sefer is that much of what happens doesn't really happen. It's things that are being thought about. Like, for example, the whole discussion of Amishkavi Balelot, right? She is there at night thinking about this guy. And this is what she's thinking about. And this is what she's dreaming about. And these are her plans and her hopes. And right? They aren't necessarily things that really already happened. And things that even that are being said are very likely being said only in her imagination. In any case, my point is that I think the general kivun for understanding the Sefer, and again, I know there are tremendously different ways of looking at it, many different mefarshim, from the most ancient to the most modern, explaining in very, very different ways. Again, my vote is for one holistic story, but that the sequence doesn't really make sense and the flow doesn't make sense because we're really talking about, you know, dreams and hopes and plans for the future and things that she's thinking about, you know, like what she would like him to do, say, v'chule, v'chule. Okay? Is everyone with me so far? Yes? Generally, do what I'm saying? Okay. I'm not asking you to agree. Just with, you know, understand what I'm suggesting. Okay. Again, you have to, you know, read through the whole thing and see. I think that there's a lot to be said for this. And alongside and as part of this idea and kind of transitioning into point number 5 is the idea that, first of all, there's a contrast that runs through the Sefer between the royal palace and the royal wedding, right? Where it talks about Shlomo HaMelech and his marriage, or marriages, for that matter, or whatever, but his this royal wedding that takes place, and the scene in the palace, and all of that description, which, if you look at it, is very, very magnificent in terms of, you know, the wealth and the size and the numbers, but very, very dry and stale, and, you know, there's absolutely no real romance there. There's no real love. There's nothing, you know, of substance there. And it's the antithesis of what we have by the Rayan the Dod, where there is this tremendous, you know, if anyone, I think, who would be asked, would you like to be the Dod or Raya? Would you like to be, you know, the king and queen in this story? There's no question what they would pick. There's no question that the love that's real here is the love between the Dod and the Raya, these simple, you know, peasants, if you will, as opposed to these regular people, as opposed to the king and queen and the royal palace and all that, and the garden is a much more real setting for love than the palace and so on down the line. And for that matter, the dreams and hopes and plans and longing is much more real than the real wedding that is actually taking place in the palace. And that's also very important. Okay? Which brings us to point number 5. Point number 5 is that a theme that runs throughout the Sefer, in fact, is the beginning and end, the very conclusion of the Sefer, which we're not going to go into in great length, but it's very, very important. This is the first box, right in the middle. Berach dodi udmelach litzvi ol ofra yalim al hareb samim. That idea we have throughout the Sefer, but it's the conclusion of the whole Sefer, in which he tells her to run away and to be like the tzvi or the ofra hayalim, al hareb samim. And this is a very important image that runs through the whole Sefer. Dr. Felix has who's one of the great scholars in terms of issues of nature. Okay, he has tremendous stuff in terms of nature, in terms of plants and animals and so on. Been, you know, for decades and decades, it's like really the foundation of all these things. Written tons of svarim on nature in Tanakh and in the Mishnah and Bechule, and done an incredible amount of work on this. He's like considered the expert. Wrote a commentary on Shir HaShirim, and one of the things he talks about in the beginning. And it's also in that Mikra, there's a little piece from him, but it's just a little snippet, where he writes about what are the Tzvi and the Ofer HaElim, what's that all about? And he explains that these animals have, part of their mating ritual is that they have this, first of all, they separate from each other until it's time for them to mate, and that's something that's alluded to many times in the Sefer. And in addition to that, when it is time for them to mate, there's this whole dance that they do of running away from each other and running towards each other, and that's really the image of Brach Dodi, right? And it says explicitly, like, be like the Tzvi and the Ofer HaElim, meaning that from the very beginning of the Sefer, Mashreini Acharecha Narutza, right? The idea of distance, of longing being the catalyst for bringing closer, right? In other words, one of the most important, perhaps the most important message, I would say the most important message of Shir HaShirim is this image of the idea that when we have galut and when we have Churban and when there's this distance between Hashem and Am Yisrael, that distancing, that hester pan, that pulling back by Hashem is in order to pull us towards Him, okay? And that perspective on Churban and Galut runs through the entire Sefer. I think that's the core Nimshal, and there are many examples of this, and we could spend the whole Shir just on that one point. I've done that in the past, but I'm not going to do it today. That's why I'm not going to do it today. But in any case, I think that's a very important point, beyond what Felix says, you know, and he says very important, but this is really a central idea, and there's so much that has to do with this. But the idea of the longing and the, you know, as a means of pulling closer and a muscle for the relationship between Hashem and Bnei Yisrael. And this is really, again, al regel achat, one level of meaning of the famous statement of Rabbi Akiva, right, where Rabbi Akiva says that. Appears in many different places, but one of them you have here in the Midrash Tanchuma and Parshat Tzaveh. Shekol haktuvim kodesh v'shir hashirim kodesh kodeshim. Right? So we know shir hashirim is kodesh kodeshim. What does that mean? So it means many things. Right? And literally give you two whole shirim about that one line, but just, you know, okay, very, very briefly, say there. one thing that one might suggest is the following: what is the center of the Kodesh HaKodeshim? What's the center of the Kodesh HaKodeshim? The center of the Kodesh HaKodeshim is the Aron. What's in the Aron? Says the Gemara Menachot, Luchot v'Shivrei Luchot Munachim ba'Aron. Right. The centerpiece is the Aron. The Aron contains two things: the Luchot and the broken Luchot. And that's very important, because the Luchot represents the relationship, as Chazal describes, the Ketubah between Hashem and Am Yisrael. The Shivrei Luchot represent the fact that we have Chet HaEgel, and what happens after Chet HaEgel? Moshe Rabbeinu smashes the Luchot. The way that Moshe Rabbeinu brings Am Yisrael and Hashem back together is by showing this, you know, look, you've lost this relationship. Look, Hashem is, separating from you. Look what you stand to lose. And that's how, right, the beginning of the process of tshuva and getting Bnei Yisrael coming back to Hashem after Chet HaEgel. So that, the Shir HaShirim is all about that idea of not only the Luchot, the great love between Hashem and Bnei Yisrael, but the idea of the Shivrei Luchot, that sometimes Hashem needs to distance Himself from us in order to draw us close to Him. Right, and that's the Luchot v'Shivrei Luchot Menachem Aron. That's the Kodesh HaKodeshim, and therefore Shir HaShirim. One way of understanding Shir HaShirim, one level of it is the idea of the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Above and beyond, obviously, the obvious meaning of what Rabbi Akiva says. Okay, there's a whole other level, but not for today. Okay. So we're now ready to begin. This was the background. Well, now we can begin. What I want to do with you. I had just a little chazara just so we can get, you know, up to speed. And okay, some of it was new, actually. But the main point we didn't... Okay, now I want to get to this crazy idea that I had in the last little while that I wanted to share with you. So I was thinking about this question. You know, if Shir HaShirim is really about this idea of galut, korban, about Hashem pulling away in order to bring us closer, about how the longing for Hashem is sometimes more real than the reality of having this close relationship. If it's really about the period of galut and korban, isn't it strange that Shlomo HaMelech is writing this? Shlomo HaMelech is the person to write about. Shlomo HaMelech is the one who builds the Beit HaMikdash. This is the very, very beginning of Bayit Rishon. He's thinking about korban, he's writing about korban. And what does he know about korban? What does he know about galut? What does he know about a period of distance between Hashem and Am Yisrael? So, Beseder, it's Baruch HaKodesh, but how does this connect to Shlomo HaMelech? Why is this what he's inspired to? You understand what I'm saying? Where is Shlomo, you know, so Shir HaShirim HaShel Shlomo, but where is the Shlomo HaMelech in it? What's the connection? Where is he coming from? Okay? And that's what I'd like to try to suggest an answer to over the next few minutes. Okay? Seder? Here we go. We have to keep in mind that throughout the Sefer, there's a tremendous parallelism between what it says about the Dod and what it says about the Ra'aya. Right? The two are parallel one to the other. Okay? It's mamish almost like looking in the mirror. And, you know, maybe some of that has to do with the fact that perhaps really it's the Ra'aya speaking throughout, and she's, you know, either quoting the Dod or projecting onto the Dod what she would like, whatever, or some combination thereof. But be that as it may, there's certainly this idea of the parallelism between the Dod and the Ra'aya, and the same things are said about each, you know, about each one says about the other that they're unique, each one says about the other very similar descriptions of their physical and as well as other attributes. Obviously, one is male and one is female, and there are differences, but there's a tremendous parallelism underlying it. So I'm going to work interchangeably between the Dod and the Ra'aya. Just to give you one example, you know, let's take the most basic thing. What is the occupation of the Dod? What is he?
Shepherd.
He's a shepherd, okay. Let's try for a biblical word.
Roeh,
thank you. I know we can do it. Okay. So the Dod, right, the Dod is a Roeh. Okay, and what is she? Right, she is, she is the Ra'aya, right? Ra'ayati, throughout the entire, right, she is the Ra'aya, okay? Everyone see? Right, everyone see the parallelism right there in their basic identity, right? He's the Ro'a, and she's the Ra'aya. Now, he's also the Dod, but I'm saying, we see already just in her name, well, I mean, she doesn't really have, you know, but her name, or description is parallel to one of the descriptions of the Roeh. Okay? Beseder? Now, let's go a step further. Okay, let's go a step further. Let's look at some of what it says. So, for example, if you look on the bottom of the first page, okay, it says, we have, for example, Mashcheni, we already read this passage, let's read it again. Mashcheni acharecha narutza, Heviyani Hamelech Hadarav, Nagila ben Smucha Bach, Nazkira Dodecha Miyain, Nesharim Ayivucha. Okay, Heviyani Hamelech Hadarav, and the simple meaning is, I think, that who is the Melech here? Who is the Melech?
The Dod.
The Dod, right? In other words, she describes the Dod, her beloved, as her lover, as being, you know, this king, as far as she's concerned, right? This, her prince, charming, her, you know, whatever you want to call it. Which is very important because, for one thing, it goes back to this idea of the contrast between the royal wedding, right? The royal wedding and the romance between the Dod and the Ra'aya, That's one aspect of it. And therefore, not only is he referred to as the Melech, but how is she referred to? As the Kala, right? So in the same area where it talks about the royal wedding and how Shlomo HaMelech, you know, this wedding feast and the Arpiryon and the whole description of the palace and the king, and it talks about her as Kalati Tamati and so on and so forth, right? So we understand he's called the Melech just as, right? Just as, you know, because in their private world, he's the prince, he's the king. Okay? But beyond that, let's go on. Okay? Needless to say, we all know that he is referred to as the Dod throughout the entire Sefer, right? Sror Hamor Dodi Li Bein Shaddai Alin Eshkol Kofer Dodi Li B'Karmei En Gedi. Okay? And talks about the Dod and places him in En Gedi. Okay, very nice. What a beautiful place, what a beautiful setting, right? And we go on a little bit. And I'm going to give you a few tonight. And then we come to Pasuk Tet Vav and Tet Zayin, where they talk about the beauty of each other's eyes, right? And Hinach Yafa Rayati, Hinach Yafa Einayach Yonim. And the response is Hincha Yafedodi Afnaim Afarsenu Ranana. Okay, so we have this description of the Einayach Yafim, right? The beautiful eyes. Again, it's said about her, but remember that there's this parallelism, and she responds that you too are so handsome, or right, with saying the Yofi is mirrored here. And then we continue in Perek Dalet, Pasuk Aleph, where he again says to her, Hinak Yafa Raiti, Hinak Yafa. Forgive me, I'm recovering from bronchitis. Baruch Hashem, I'm much, much better, but you have to bear with my cough just a little bit. Hinach yafa rayati, hinach yafa, hinach yonim, mibal samatech, sarech, ke'eder ha'izim, shekalshu mehar gilad. And again, when she describes him in Perek Hei Pasuk Yubed, einav kayonim, here specifically she speaks about his eyes, einav kayonim, alafi kemayim, rechutzot b'chalav, yoshot al-milet. Okay, and finally in Pasuk Yud, we have a description, a physical description of him, that dodi tzach v'adom, Dagul Mervava. Okay? Dodi Tzach V'Adom. Okay, Dagul Mervava. Okay. So.
Can I get you some water?
No, I'm good, thank you. I have coffee. I just keep on forgetting to drink it because I'm a little bit preoccupied. Immersed, as it were. Okay. So. Now, and by the way, we should just mention that it's interesting that how do we begin with the idea of, right, Mashcheni Acharecha Narutza, right, this whole thing, Mashcheni Acharecha Narutza, she says to him, right, and I just want to mention also, In that same little section, it talks about the idea of the yayin and the right and the shem. Okay, so I had this crazy idea. I was thinking here about this lover who is described as a shepherd and a king. Okay, as have these beautiful eyes, and being tzach v'adom, right? And I thought about Shmuel al Perek Tet Zayin a little bit. And Vayomer Shmuel Yishai, Hatamu hanarim, Vayomer od sha'ar hakatan, v'nei ro'er batzom. Vayomer Shmuel Yishai, Shilcha v'kachenu, Kilo nasev ad bo'opo. Veishlach v'vi'eu v'hu admoni im yifei enayim, v'tov ro'i, v'yomar adonai kum mashchehu, ki zehu. V'kach Shmuel et keren hashemen, Vayimshach oto bekerev echav. Vatislach ruach Adonai el David me'ayom ahu b'mala. Vayakam Shmuel vayelach haramata. Okay, throughout much of Tanakh, and we have both spellings, but throughout most of Tanakh, right, throughout most of Tanakh, David, right, Shmuel, and okay, it depends on what part of Tanakh, then Yesh V'Yesh, but and parts of Malachim Hasan, Chule, but the original spelling, certainly, the earlier spelling, and the spelling throughout much of Tanakh for David is what?
Right.
It's Dalet Vav Dalet. Okay? The exact same word as, in terms of letters, the same word as
Dod.
And of course, David is the shepherd king, right? Described when we first, you know, have this introduction to him. It's not the first time we meet David, but it is the first time. We first introduced to David here in Berak Tetzain. Sorry. We introduced him as Admoni, right? Dodi Tzach Ba'adom. We introduced him as Admoni. Im Yifei Einayim, right? And we all know about the story with David and En Gedi. And I very strongly suspect that Mashcheni is a play on the word Mashicha as well. And of course, David is the original Mashiach Hashem. Well, not the original as in the first chronologically, but really the prototype. Of course, David constantly talks about Shaul as Mashiach Hashem. But the point is that David is Nimshach with the Shemen, and he is the Mashiach Hashem. And I strongly suspect that the Dod in the Shir HaShirim, and I don't think there's a way to prove this, but I gave you some of the reasons why I think this is the case. I gave you the easier ones, but you know, meaning the easier ones for me to give you. But the in any case, I'd like to suggest the possibility that this story, which clearly is meant to be an analogy, it's meant to be a mashal, it's meant to be a means of conveyance, it's not describing historical events. No one thinks that, you know, that Shlomo HaMelech is simply recording some love scenes that it is either fabricated entirely or using some real story, but you know, adjusting it for the purposes of the. I mean, that's not even. I don't think that's at all anything other than the obvious pshat. You know, it's not in any way radical to suggest that this is not meant to be, conveying historical. Clearly a mashal, Chazal emphasized that lehepa, that has to be understood only as a mashal, that the point is that the Dod, I think, is very much built on David, and the point that I'm getting at is the following. I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but very, very quickly, I want to suggest the following idea. If we look at Shmuel Be'er Perek Vav for a moment, on the second side, I'm not going to do everything on the second side, but I just want to do this one little snippet. Vayosef O David et kol bachor b'Yisrael shoshim aleph v'yakam v'yelech David b'chol ha'am asher ito mi'ba'le Yehuda La'lot misham et aron Elohim asher nikra sham shem Adonai tzva'ot yoshev akruvim alav. Ve'kivu et aron Elohim al agalah chadasha ve'yiseu mibeit Avinadav asher begivah v'uzah v'achav v'nei Avinadav no'agim et agalah chadasha. Etc. I'm going to skip to pasuk hey. V'David v'chol beit Yisrael misachakim l'fnei Adonai b'chol atzei broshim v'kinorot v'nevalim tupim v'menanim v'tzaltzalim. Pasuk yudal. V'David mechaker b'chol oz l'fnei Adonai v'David chagur efod ba'an. V'David v'chol beit Yisrael ma'alim et aron Adonai b'tru'a v'kol shofar. And then it goes on, continues, etc. I want to make the following point. There's a little tiny piece of it. Obviously, it's a thread that runs through the whole David story. We know, Sefer Shmuel, Divrei Hayamim, Tehillim, the tremendous longing, the goal of David HaMelech, the desire, the passion of David HaMelech's life to the degree that it was possible to work towards establishing the Beit HaMikdash, to bring the Aron, to, you know, bring Karbanot and Gornav and Ayavusi, to do whatever was possible, to gather the funds and to lay the groundwork for the building of Beit HaMikdash, and he's prevented from doing it. David HaMelech does not get to build the Beit HaMikdash, but Mizmor Shir HaKadosh Baruch Hu, David lays the groundwork and he initiates and he sets the groundwork for. But David, there's an ongoing theme of David's longing for Beit Hashem, for his longing for bringing the Shechina to Am Yisrael, and it's something that you see the dancing and the singing and the rejoicing when even a little bit of it and the constant, you know, this constant attempt to bring this about. And I just wanted to suggest, I'm sorry, get to just 1 minute, apologies, but I'm going to finish the train of thought, that what I'd like to suggest is a very simple idea, that Shlomo HaMelech succeeds in building the Beit HaMikdash. And he actually builds the Beit HaMikdash, and it's glorious, and it's wonderful, it's a great achievement. And clearly, the goal, and what we would like, is that there be a Beit HaMikdash. No doubt about that. And that's why Shlomo HaMelech actually builds the Beit HaMikdash. That's a tremendous achievement. We're discussing all the problems and but it's a tremendous achievement. But I'm very convinced that Shlomo HaMelech looks at his achievement and understands in a very, very real way that the desire to work towards building the Beit HaMikdash, that the longing for bringing the Aron and the Shechina into Am Yisrael of his father was a greater love than the actualization that takes place in his generation. That what David HaMelech achieved with Am Yisrael, and what, you know, the love story of David HaMelech and the Beit HaMikdash is a much more passionate, much more real, much more loving tale than the story of the actual completion of the building that takes place in the time of Shlomo HaMelech. And I think, again, we can't do this in the few minutes that we have, but you read Sefer Shmuel, you read and Divrei Hayamim and Tehillim, and you read Sefer Melachim as taking that away from the great achievement of Shlomo HaMelech building the Beit HaMikdash. You can't compare, you know, just as you look at the royal wedding, and the royal wedding is, you know, it's a royal wedding, and then there are, you know, millions of people watching the royal wedding, but the romance between the Dod and the Raya is the real thing. And the same thing is true here. And I think that this is what Shlomo HaMelech understands from his own experience. He understands that it's possible, not that it has to be, or that it's necessarily so, or that it takes away from the fact that, of course, nonetheless, we try to reach the goal and build the Beit HaMikdash, but he realizes that it could be that there is such a thing in this world as the longing and the striving for being more real and greater and deeper than the actualization of the relationship. And that, therefore, Shlomo HaMelech is able to look at what he knows from Torah, what he knows from the Nevi'im, etc., that, you just look in Chumash, that there is such a concept as galut, and there's such a concept as chorban, and you know, it's there in the psukim, and he's able to draw from his experience and his insight into his own experience of the contrast between before there's a Beit HaMikdash and when there actually is, right, and project that onto what it means when you have a period of galut and chorban and you're longing for the return of the Beit HaMikdash. And to be able to say, there's this concept of Mashcheni Acharecha Narutza, right? And that is not something foreign to his experience. Lehefech, it's something that he has lived through and understands very well. He may not have seen it in terms of what he's saying about, you know, the period of Galut and Churban, but he's seen it in terms of the period leading up to the Beit Hamikdash and how it contrasts with what, you know, what happened in his own day. And I think that that's the reason why this is Shir HaShirim Asher L'Shlomo. And it's beyond just that he wrote it, but that why this is something that is connected to the person, the life, and the experience of Shlomo HaMelech, and the insight that comes not just from, not only from divine inspiration, but from divine inspiration applied to his personal experience. So I think that this is a level of meaning of Shir HaShirim that is important and that is real. I think it's certainly subtle, but the nature of Shir HaShirim is that everything in it is subtle, and it has to be judged, I think, by that standard. But in any case, I present it as a theory, as a suggestion for your consideration as you learn through Shir HaShirim, to consider hopefully all six of the keys, but particularly this sixth one, which the Shir was about, and that's a suggestion that I, and I apologize for keeping you waiting for it. You had a question or a comment?
No, I just want to be clear. You're saying that the Raya is Hashem?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that the that's beyond the scope of what I'm going to discuss right now. But what I'm saying is that I do think that the relationship between the Dod and the Ra'ayah is about the relationship between Hashem and Bnei Israel, and particularly in the context of the whole issue of Galut and Korban. I'm saying that the Dod alludes to, you know, it's a way of Shlomo hinting at what's behind the scenes of this story. Okay, I'm just saying that aside from the whole mashal and nimshal that's going on and how the Raya and the Dod reflect this relationship between Hashem and Israel and the Mishkan and the Mechulei Mechulei, that he gives us clues, right? He gives us hints to what's behind this whole story, where it's coming from, where the Prophet is coming from, and that part of that is through the identity of the Dod that alludes to David HaMel. That's what I was trying to say, and I don't need to imply more than that. Okay? Anyhow, again, thank you very much for the opportunity, and hopefully we gave you some food for thought, and I hope this will, you know, as you continue to learn Shir HaShirim over your lifetimes, and over our lifetimes, that this should, I hope that this is will help give you a little bit of, I say conclusions, but at least some things to think about, some tools to perhaps apply. Okay.